Welcome to By the Bay for Friday, April 17th.
April 17th? There's no way that could be right, could it?
Oh, but it is. We're looking at some perspectives on the upcoming fishing season as we head toward the summer in a time of uncertain markets where the parameters of the workforce have yet to be determined.
We talk with the clinical director of BBAHC about where the corporation is in its preparations. We explore new guidelines for sport fishing that were introduced this week by the state and how these restrictions could affect tourism in Bristol Bay. The Brooks Camp development in Katmai National Park will close until at least July 1st. The park superintendent lays out how they're planning for the season.
And we take a break from COVID coverage to look at a partnership between BBNC and the Igeaguk Village Council to move ahead on its quarry project at Diamond Point.
And we have the latest on the situation around the state, all that coming up next.
Let's dive right in. The state announced 9 new cases of COVID-19 today in Anchorage, Juneau, and the Kenai Peninsula. That brings the total count to 309 Alaskans diagnosed with the disease, 128 of whom have recovered. There was 1 new hospitalization and no new deaths. About 9,500 tests have been conducted so far. Now turning to the fishing season. Bristol Bay is the largest and most valuable sockeye salmon fishery in the world. Millions of reds return to spawn in streams and lakes around the region, and thousands of commercial fishermen, processors, and cannery workers come to the Bristol Bay region in the summer. The region has limited healthcare infrastructure, and this year, concerns about COVID-19 are hanging over the season. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I filed this report. In any normal spring, Dillingham's Boat Harbor would be starting to stir with activity. Fishermen from around the world come to Bristol Bay's hub town to get boats ready, making repairs and mending nets. The short fishing season normally runs through June and July. During that time, Bristol Bay's population of around 7,000 people, scattered around small communities in the region, swells to 3 times that size with seasonal workers. But this year, of course, things are different. Thomas Tilden is the first chief of the Chukayung Tribal Council in Dillingham.
Well, you know, I'm also a fisherman. And that's my livelihood. But, you know, when I look at the overall picture, I could sit out a season if I have to. I mean, that to me, my life is more important than being able to fish.
The tribe and Dillingham City Council asked Governor Mike Dunleavy last week to consider closing the fishery, something that would have been unthinkable 2 months ago. Several tribes have joined Dillingham, urging Dunleavy to take action. The governor has designated fishermen and processors as critical infrastructure. Processors are required to submit plans to the state detailing their health and safety plans, but there are also concerns about how well social distancing and quarantine enforcement can work with thousands of visitors. The plans processors have published so far very widely in their level of detail, and Tilden says many questions remain unanswered. There is only one hospital in the region. It has 16 beds and 12 spaces for coronavirus patients as of Thursday. In their letters, local leaders say that an outbreak among the fishing fleet would overwhelm the system.
The potential for wiping out whole communities is real, you know, to us.
Bristol Bay was devastated by the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic. Some historians estimate that 40% of the adult population died from the illness. At that time, Tilden's family lived to the west of the region, on Nelson Island. Tilden's mother and grandmother survived the 1918 epidemic. He says they didn't speak of it often.
They quietly talked about it, you know, about some of the things that they witnessed and saw and experienced. I just remember that. Remember that they, it would get quiet in the room, and it would get quiet a long time afterwards.
But for some fishermen, like those who come from other parts of the country, closing the fishery is not the best option. There are petitions on change.org calling both for restrictions on out-of-state travel to Bristol Bay and to keep the fishery open. Mark Wagner usually set nets off Pilot Point, southeast of Dillingham. Right now, he's in Puyallup, Washington, near his parents, who are in their 90s. Wagner is 62. He's been fishing for 12 years in Bristol Bay, and he says he understands local concerns about the fishery moving forward this summer. He has friends where he fishes that are in vulnerable groups, but he hopes that residents will consider the financial cost to those who fish. It provides up to 3/4 of his income each year.
You know, there's a lot of us that depend on the huge percentage of our annual income from coming out there for a month, essentially a month. I and all the other fishermen I've talked to, processors, you know, we're really committed to developing protocols that I think 6 weeks, 2 months from now are going to keep the people out there safe. You know, if it's still an issue, which I'm sure will be somewhat of an issue 2 months from now.
He says that if it came down to fishing or applying for disaster relief funds, there's no question about what he'd want to do.
I would rather fish. I would rather make money working. I don't want to be dependent on a handout to make my season.
Last year, the fishery clocked in with a preliminary value of more than $300 million, its highest ever. This year, the market is much less stable. Industry organizations and economists are pointing to shifts in the market for other seafood like halibut. Companies could focus on products like canned salmon instead of restaurant-grade fillets, but that's not a given. Part of the discussion is also about the region's ecology. Almost 49 million fish are forecast to return to Bristol Bay's rivers, lakes, and streams this summer. Many fishermen are concerned that if the fishery closes, there will be too many sockeye in the system and intense competition that means fewer fish will survive. Daniel Schindler is a professor at the University of Washington. He has studied the river systems of Bristol Bay for decades.
The biological concerns are certainly real in the sense that at high densities, these fish do compete with each other. But what's been lost in the discussion is the reality that that level of competition is not so extreme that it causes a total crash in the population.
Fewer sockeye caught by fishermen does mean more competition for resources upstream, but Schindler says that the argument about too many fish damaging future runs doesn't have scientific backing.
The scientific data to support that story simply are not there. There's essentially no evidence for that overescapement effect that causes these population collapses.
Governor Dunleavy has said the state has a team working with tribal and local leaders, fishermen, and processors to determine whether a fishery is possible this year. Rick Green works with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as a special assistant to the commissioner. He says that as the pandemic unfolds, Fish and Game is learning from the fisheries that are currently underway in other parts of the state, like black cod and crab.
We're finding ways to operate those fisheries safely, not only for our employees, but safely for the fishermen, and safely for the communities in which we're prosecuting those fisheries. The governor has the authority and would direct the commissioner to do whatever it is, but we haven't got that direction, so we have to plan and head forward as if we are full-on operating.
Meanwhile, Bristol Bay's regional organizations have gathered together to demand a comprehensive set of requirements for people coming to fish and work if the season goes forward.
So, ADF&G doesn't have any jurisdiction over whether the state opens or closes the fishery, but they are working to implement safety measures?
That's right. We just heard from Rick Green, who is the special assistant to the commissioner of Fish and Game. Green said that they're learning from the fisheries currently underway. Looking ahead, they're specifically focused on Cordova.
Cordova is working with the processors on ways they can prosecute that fishery and the processing in a safe manner for all the parties involved. We'll learn off that. We're going to be learning off of Cook Inlet as we are already starting to put our resources out and our infrastructure out to manage those fisheries. And we intend at this point to continue using everything we learn to see if we can't operate a safe fishery in Bristol Bay as well.
Here's what Green said. They're learning specifically about how to operate safely this year.
Some of the things we're looking at that we're having to do is, you know, how do we get fish tickets signed? And that's really more in our purview. I know the processors are coming up with plans on how they can keep their campuses secure, you know, and protect the communities. And we're also learning things like we need to have medevacs standing by so if our people get sick, we can medevac them out to not put an undue burden on the local health infrastructure of the area. And so each time we learn something new and we're adapting, we're learning more
Bristol Bay's regional organizations are also demanding a comprehensive set of requirements for people coming to fish and work in the region. In a letter to Governor Mike Dunleavy Wednesday, the Bristol Bay Working Group calls on the state to set a program of rigorous enforcement in place to ensure that fishermen and workers are complying with health mandates. It also calls for pre-testing fisheries workers arriving in the region for COVID-19 and requires a follow-up test to come back negative after the workers arrive. If the state can't implement the requirements, the group says the fishery should be closed. The group writes, quote, "If the fishery is allowed to go forward without those measures, ignoring the warnings of public health experts and officials and the pleas of Bristol Bay communities, the consequences will be devastating and generational," unquote. The letter also voices concerns about the health and safety of residents during the upcoming commercial fishing season. It points out that the region has only one hospital with 16 beds and no intensive care units. In their letter, the organizations say that an outbreak among the fishing fleet would overwhelm the system. Meanwhile, the state is continuing forward with plans for the commercial fishery this summer. Rick Green, who we just heard from, says that as the pandemic unfolds, Fish and Game is learning from the fisheries that are currently underway in other parts of the state, like black cod and crab. The Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation is continuing preparations for a potential outbreak of coronavirus in the region as well. Dr. Kathy Heineman is the clinical director of the corporation. She says that they are in regular conversations with a multitude of agencies and stakeholders about precautions for the upcoming fishing season, from daily critical incident meetings to weekly talks with villages about what clinics can do to prepare.
We are being very plain about what we have access to, which is we do have oxygen, which is the major thing that is needed to treat the majority of the cases. But we are also being very plain that we do not have ICU coverage, and anybody that requires intensive care unit level of care is going to have to go to Anchorage.
The corporation is currently reviewing the various testing modalities that are available. Kanakanak Hospital has acquired a testing machine that can conduct a quick test for the virus. But while its positive tests are accurate, Heineman says a negative test is not a guarantee that the patient does not have the virus.
I surely wish we had a 100% surefire way of saying you don't have this disease and it's safe for you to fish. And I cannot say that at this time.
Still, Heineman says that Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage is looking toward getting machinery that can test for antibodies associated with COVID-19. Heineman says the hospital in Dillingham has the capacity to handle about 12 patients that need additional oxygen. BBAHC is making arrangements to rent Grandma's house in downtown Dillingham as an alternative care facility with 20 additional beds, which would be utilized for recovering patients who did not need oxygen. Heineman says they are talking with canneries and processors about how to best coordinate the various means of testing for coronavirus.
We are hoping that our discussions with the local fishery and with the fishery in general will decrease the risk to our communities, but we will never get that risk down to zero.
The hospital is also providing telephone consultation. People can call the outpatient department at 907-842-9367 to schedule an appointment. Emergency care is still available at the facility as well. The corporation is encouraging residents to postpone standard elective appointments like pap smears. As of Thursday evening, there have been no reported cases of COVID-19 in Bristol Bay. BBAHC asks all patients to call before coming to the hospital and to wear masks when they do so. You can call the hospital at 907-842-5201. And wearing masks in public is highly recommended to avoid spreading germs. I talked to Dr. Heineman about how to handle your masks properly. You mentioned that you had some tips on masks for people out and about, you know, when you have to go to the grocery store, when you have to go to the post office, when you have to go to these public spaces that you're otherwise trying to avoid. How does one properly wear a mask, and what is some good mask etiquette that keeps you safe?
So we are asking everybody that comes to the hospital to wear a mask. All employees wear masks, at least when they are out in the public areas. All patients are asked to wear masks when they come in. What I do, and what I would recommend that all do, is I put my mask on in the car before I get out of the car. If your mask is brand clean, you don't have to worry too much about putting it on. You just put it on. However, once it is on your face, it should stay there. And by on your face, I mean covering your nose and your mouth. Having your nose sticking out does not keep snot from blowing on other people. Having it draped around one ear does not cover the part of you that is likely to be spewing viral particles. So be sure to have it covering both your nose and your mouth. Wearing a mask all day long, every day in the hospital is giving me cheek rash. And what I would have to say is, when I'm in my office alone, I take it off. But here's how I take it off. I grasp the earpieces and loosen them from my ears. And then I put my mask down on a specific spot so that whatever's on the outside stays on the outside. Whatever I've breathed into it stays on the inside. When I pick that mask back up, I once again pick it up by the earpieces, the elastic or the ties, and put those over my ears or tie it behind my head, and do not touch either the inside or the outside of the mask. Then I wash my hands. When I get home from the store and have taken off my mask, I wash my hands because you don't know what's on the outside of your mask. And for at least cloth masks, it's important to wash them on a regular basis as well. Hot soapy water is the way to wash these, and then you can dry them. You can let them hang to dry. You can put them in the dryer. I iron mine dry because this virus can't stand heat, and I like the thought of burning the little buggers out. We have had multiple people sewing masks at the hospital for distribution to patients and out to the villages. And we have really appreciated the creativity and the beauty of the masks that have come in from our own workers, as well as the ones that have been so very generously donated by a multitude of members of the community.
Those are some very practical and understandable tips for how to, you know, remove your mask, put it on, when, and how to clean them.
Thanks again, Dr. Heinemann, for joining us this week. Stick around to the end of the show for more from that conversation. Now I'd like to talk about tourism and sport fishing in Bristol Bay. The region is a hotspot for summer tourism, and a big draw is sport fishing. While the state lists fishing of any kind as critical infrastructure due to COVID-19, travel mandates could make those trips an upstream battle for people trying to come in from out of state. Governor Mike Dunleavy and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game released specific guidelines this week for people who want to sport fish in Alaska. Fishermen are required to take precautions like social distancing and wearing masks. They will also have to bring their own provisions from home to prevent them from going into communities for food or fuel. They must also abide by the local mandates of their destination. Rick Green with ADF&G says the guidelines were put into place to fulfill subsistence needs for Alaskans.
This thought was really for Alaskans to have the ability to get out and fill their freezers. With the 14-day quarantine mandate for any out-of-stater coming into Alaska, I don't think we're going to see the out-of-staters come in.
Summer tourism generates important revenue for Bristol Bay communities like Igiagig. People start traveling to the village in June when lodges open for sport fishing. The village council met this week to discuss the upcoming season.
We've had lodges calling in and asking, do we even come out? Should we land and walk directly to the river and drive straight to our lodge with no interactions in the community at all? Or do you just not want us out totally? But we've told them as of yesterday, we have to take this day by day because every week it's something new. And
that's council member Christina Salmon Bringhurst. She says several families who own businesses in the village of around 70 residents also depend on that revenue.
It would be sad to not have it open here, but at the same time, our village council is not going to do anything to compromise the health of anyone here. We're so small that losing one person would be devastating for us. The health of our people is above and beyond anything else at this moment.
Brian Kraft owns the Alaska Sportsman's Lodge just south of the village, one of the businesses working with the community. The lodge averages around 500 guests in the summer. Tourists spend between $6,000 to $9,000 for 3 or 5 day trips, including airfare. Kraft says the quarantine would have to be lifted for lodges to operate realistically.
Not many guests come up here for 14 days. Quite honestly, if quarantining is still in effect and masks and gloves are required and COVID is still rampant throughout the country and spreading still, that's not the experience we want to have. We're not going to subject our clientele to that, our staff to that, or if we have influx in the community, we're not going to want to be a part of that. So,
Kraft also owns the Bristol Bay Lodge in Aleknagik. They average around 300 tourists per season. Another regional lodge owner who asks not to be named is considering closing due to travel restrictions and quarantine requirements. Meanwhile, over in Katmai National Park, they're making changes that will affect tourism on their own. At the park, the Brooks Camp developed area averages around 20,000 visitors in the summer. The lodge and campgrounds are a short walk from Brooks Falls, where tourists flock to view bears. But those sections of the park will be closed off until at least July 1st, 1 month later, due to the coronavirus. Brooks Camp typically opens on June 1st. The park decided to delay its opening in part because the state and local governments have restricted travel. Katmai Superintendent Mark Sturm says seasonal staff usually flies to the region this time of year.
The intent is to bring people in as we can, as long as the state and local restrictions and other guidelines that we're trying to adhere to allow. We have some infrastructure out there. The bears are going to start showing up. Lodge staff will probably be out there too, helping to make sure that things are being kept in good repair.
Revenue from day trippers and overnight bookings helps cover the costs of seasonal staff who manage Katmai's operations. With less visitors, Sturm says they need to figure out how to run the park on a smaller budget, both this year and next.
If we're going to have a reduced level of funding that's received from this year for standing up next year, we need to think about the operational implications of that. I can tell you that the park will have a reduced level of staffing regardless of how this year goes, mostly because we're trying to hold on to some of our revenues for out-year planning so that we can be whole next year when we try to start things up again.
Sturm also says that reduced staffing will help the park manage any worker who gets sick. Housing units will be used to isolate anyone showing symptoms related to COVID-19. Sturm is also participating in the Bristol Bay Borough's Emergency Planning Committee. He says the park's ability to help is limited, but they will try to make their resources available in the event of a crisis.
But we do have some capacity for emergencies, medical services. If the community needs those skills, we would do everything we could to make them available for use.
The rest of the park is open to the public if people can access it safely. Visitors will be expected to follow local and state health mandates like social distancing. Sturm hopes the landscape will change enough to allow for visitors later this year.
And finally, in some non-COVID news, the Bristol Bay Native Corporation has partnered with the Igiagic Village Council to acquire a 15% ownership of Diamond Point LLC. That includes the company's main asset, a quarry. The quarry is located on the west side of Cook Inlet. Ilyaska Environmental, a subsidiary of Igiagic's council, purchased Diamond Point in 2013. Christina Salmon-Bringers is a council member and manager of Ilyaska Environmental. She says they want to provide a rock to coastal community. She says they want to provide rock to coastal communities that need shore protection. They chose BBNC because of its expertise in business and management. She says that a successful quarry will provide jobs and will allow people in the region the opportunity to stay.
We feel like with a lifespan of 20 to 30 years, if Diamond Point is successful in quarrying, you know, we could be putting shareholders and people in the region to work for 20 to 30 years.
The quarry is thought to contain 30 to 40 million cubic yards of high-quality hard rock, according to BBNC. The corporation and council hope to use that for projects in communities along the coast. Diamond Point is also more accessible than Williamsport, where barges currently offload supplies for the village.
As it is right now, it's hard for us to get barge accessibility into Williamsport all summer long. Diamond Point, you can access 30 days per month.
Salmon-Bringers says they hope to eventually build a road from Diamond Point to Williamsport and open up the flow of freight into the region. The company, Diamond Point LLC, will complete testing the quarry rock material this spring and will be ready to sell it this summer. That is all for the show this Friday afternoon. Do stay tuned for our coverage throughout the week, locally and around the state. We're going to take a look at the weather right after some community announcements.
You bet. The city of Dillingham will have a manager's update on COVID-19 operations tonight. We will be broadcasting that conference at KDLG. You can also participate by dialing 888-392-4560, meeting code 5710. Please mute your phone upon entering the call or when others are speaking. The Bristol Bay Borough has installed a locked drop box in the front lobby for community convenience. Should you need to enter the building, please call first. To make an appointment, dial 907-246-4224. Nooshaghat Cooperative will have a presentation of the Niyukuk Hydroelectric Project, a study planning meeting on April 22nd from 1 p.m. until 4 p.m. The conference line to dial in will be 646-749-3122, access code 739-530-549. Contact Nooshaghat Cooperative for more information. Essential air travel permit questions, emergency ordinance questions, contact the City of Dillingham Emergency Operations Center. Email eoc@dillinghamak.us. The Bristol Bay Borough has a mandatory 14-day self-quarantine if anybody is traveling into the region. All people arriving in the Bristol Bay Borough, whether resident, worker, or visitor, are to self-quarantine for 14 days and monitor for illness. Arriving residents and workers in self-quarantine should work from home. The Bristol Bay Police Department is enforcing the Bristol Bay Borough COVID-19 health mandates. Call 907-246-4222 to report violations. That will do it for our community announcements. We're now going to shoot it over to Izzy Ross with the weather. Izzy!
It's currently 41 degrees in Dillingham. We have an east wind at 10 miles per hour, gusts up to 18 miles per hour this afternoon, wind chill down at 35 degrees. For the rest of the day, rain likely mainly before 1 p.m., cloudy with high near 48 degrees, southeast wind at about 20 miles per hour, gusts as high as 35 miles per hour, chance of precipitation at 60%. Tonight, rain likely mainly after 7 p.m., cloudy with around a 39-degree low, southeast wind at 15 to 20 miles per hour, gusts as high as 35 miles per hour. And on Saturday, rain likely mainly before 1 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 48 degrees, a southeast wind at 5 to 10 miles per hour, chance of precipitation around 60%. And on Saturday night, rain likely with mostly cloudy skies, a low of around 37 degrees, and east wind at 5 miles per hour. Over in Naknek, it's currently 50 degrees. We have a slight wind chill down there, or over there, a wind chill right around 46 degrees with an east wind at 10 miles per hour. It'll be around the same as yesterday with a high of 55 degrees. Cloudy skies early, followed by partly cloudy skies later on in the afternoon. Gusty winds as well with a south-southeast wind at 20 to 30 miles per hour, continuing into this evening with partly cloudy skies tonight in Naknek. On Saturday in Naknek, a high of 53 degrees, a low of 40 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies with a south-southeast wind continuing at 15 to 25 miles an hour. And over in Unalakleet, it's currently 35 degrees, a high of 40 degrees today, with periods of rain and an east wind at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Nearly a quarter inch of rain expected, with that precipitation continuing into tonight, an east-southeast wind at 10 to 15 miles per hour, a low of 38 degrees. On Saturday in Unalakleet, a high of 41 degrees and a low of 36 degrees. Steady light rain in the morning, showers continuing in the afternoon with an east-southeast wind at 10 to 15 miles per hour. That's all for the weather, and I think that's all for the show today as well. Please stay up to date on KDLG.org. We have a lot of interesting stories. No, you don't have to include this. And that is it for the weather today. Have a beautiful weekend, everyone. And we do have a conversation with Dr. Kathy Heineman right after this. I am here with Dr. Kathy Heineman, the clinical director of BBAHC. We're both wearing masks right now, so forgive any muffled noises.
And thank you so much for inviting me down.
I'd like to start off our conversation today by asking what residents can expect from BBHC, or what new operations have been put in place to prepare the region for potential outbreak?
We are continuing to have all people pay attention to why they are coming to the hospital and to come for urgent and emergent things preferentially. If you need to come, we still ask that you call the hospital before you come, and we are now asking that when you arrive, if you have your cell phone, give us a call, because what we want to be able to do is space your visit out from other people's visits so that there is less chance of you mingling with somebody that is ill. Obviously, if you are having a medical emergency and are going to the emergency room, you need to come right on in. But still, call ahead so that we are forewarned and know why you're coming and can be best prepared for your arrival.
We're obviously in discussions about the fishing season coming up, and there's a lot of anxiety in the region and, like, a lot of, you know, questions about what we can expect with a potential influx of workers for the summer. What is BBHC looking at?
We are in conversation with a multitude of people on a daily basis. We are talking with the city regularly, and in fact, the city manager attends our critical incident noontime meetings regularly. We are having weekly telephone conferences with the villages to help them be aware of what's going on. We have sent around questionnaires to all of the canneries and the fishing fleet as best we can, asking them what their plans are for quarantine and for people that become ill when they are out here fishing. We are being very plain about what we have access to, which is we do have oxygen, which is the major thing that is needed to treat the majority of the cases. But we are also being very plain that we do not have ICU coverage, and anybody that requires intensive care unit level of care is going to have to go to Anchorage. We are in regular contact with ANMC, our major referral hospital, and they keep us updated on the availability of ICU beds and other things that may be needed in cases of emergency. We continue to provide the usual care, though, the care for the cuts that require stitches or the broken bones or the motor vehicle accidents. We are still open for business. We are just avoiding the standard maintenance of health, like a well woman exam or your pap smear. Yes, your pap smear may be due, but putting that off for a month or two or three is not likely to cause a problem. We are excited that we have one of the testing machines that can do the quick test for COVID virus. This is new as of last week. On the plus side, if the test is positive, we're pretty sure you got COVID. Unfortunately, we are having problems with the negative tests. Currently, the testing is such that we cannot guarantee that if the test is negative, you don't have the virus. And that, of course, makes it more difficult because we would like to be able to reassure people that they truly do not have the virus, but we cannot do that at this time with the machinery that we've got. Mm. Now, this machine is designed to be used on people who are showing signs of the virus. This is not for people who are well and are just sort of, gee, maybe I got exposed to somebody. No, that is not what this machine is for.
Mm-hmm. Right. So just because you're curious about whether you may have it and are asymptomatic doesn't mean that you should be going into the hospital to get tested.
That is correct.
In terms of what the hospital's capacity looks like to care for sick patients, what does that look like? I think one of the things that people are kind of, you know, concerned about is that we as a region don't have the capacity to care for large numbers of sick people.
I would once again remind folks that most people, 80% of the people who get this disease, can be treated at home. They do not require additional oxygen. The people that do require just additional oxygen, we have the capacity to handle about 12 of them at any given single time. We have some ideas about stretching that, but honestly, about the furthest we're going to stretch that is to about 15. Now, for people who have been in the hospital, have gotten to where they don't need oxygen anymore, and yet are not really well enough to, let's say, go back home to their village, or they live with a multi-generational family and need to avoid giving it to grandma, for instance, we are in the process of getting an alternative care site that will have 20 beds available to us so that these people will have a warm, dry, safe place to recuperate. We are making arrangements to rent grandma's house for use as our alternative care facility. This care facility would not be for people who needed oxygen. However, this is for people who are in the recovery stages.
Have you heard any responses or feedback from the fishing community, from processors, fishermen who are not in the region?
Yes. In fact, I have some phone calls set up even tomorrow with one of our local canneries. I am in discussion with other people as well to try to make some sense out of the various testing modalities that are available. And I must say that I surely wish we had a 100% surefire way of saying you don't have this disease and it's safe for you to fish. And I cannot say that at this time. But we are talking with ANMC on a regular basis, and their lab director told me today that they are looking toward getting some of the machinery that can test for IgG or IgM. IgM is the first kind of antibody that a body makes when it starts to see a new bacteria. That can be a test that would let us know that, yes, you have been exposed to the virus. Unfortunately, we don't know how quickly that comes up. The estimation is that maybe it shows up 5 days after you get it, but we don't really know. And we don't know how long you can still shed virus once that test is positive. The IgG is usually thought of as the antibody that suggests that you have immunity to the disease. Unfortunately, we do not know that it actually says you have immunity because we have not known this disease for very long and we really don't know. And it appears in other countries that are now several months out of their initial phase, people who have previously tested positive for coronavirus are now testing positive again.
So a lot to still be learned there. Obviously, we're kind of heading into uncharted waters, as it were.
We've been floating on uncharted waters since January. The anxiety of what to expect affects us all. We are facing the influx of several thousand people into our community, and we are hoping that our discussions with the local fishery and with the fishery in general will decrease the risk to our communities, but we will never get that risk down to zero.
Before we head off to our respective social distancing locations, you mentioned that you had some tips on masks for people out and about, you know, when you have to go to the grocery store, when you have to go to the post office, when you have to go to these public spaces that you're otherwise trying to avoid. How does one properly wear a mask, and what is some good mask etiquette that keeps you safe?
So we are asking everybody that comes to the hospital to wear a mask. All employees wear masks, at least when they are out in the public areas. All patients are asked to wear masks when they come in. What I do, and what I would recommend that all do, is I put my mask on in the car before I get out of the car. If your mask is brand clean, you don't have to worry too much about putting it on. You just put it on. However, once it is on your face, it should stay there. And by on your face, I mean covering your nose and your mouth. Having your nose sticking out does not keep snot from blowing on other people. Having it draped around one ear does not cover the part of you that is likely to be spewing viral particles. So be sure to have it covering both your nose and your mouth. Wearing a mask all day long, every day in the hospital is giving me cheek rash. And what I would have to say is when I'm in my office alone, I take it off. But here's how I take it off. I grasp the earpieces and loosen them from my ears. And then I put my mask down on a specific spot so that whatever's on the outside stays on the outside. Whatever I've breathed into it stays on the inside. When I pick that mask back up, I once again pick it up by the earpieces, the elastic or the ties, and put those over my ears or tie it behind my head, and do not touch either the inside or the outside of the mask. Then I wash my hands. When I get home from the store and have taken off my mask, I wash my hands because you don't know what's on the outside of your mask. And for at least cloth masks, it's important to wash them on a regular basis as well. Hot soapy water is the way to wash these, and then you can dry them. You can let them hang to dry. You can put them in the dryer. I iron mine dry because this virus can't stand heat, and I like the thought of burning the little buggers out. We have had multiple people sewing masks at the hospital for distribution to patients and out to the villages, and we have really appreciated the creativity and the beauty of the masks that have come in from our own workers, as well as the ones that have been so very generously donated by a multitude of members of the community.
Those are some very practical and understandable tips for how to, you know, remove your mask, put it on, when, and how to clean them. So I really appreciate you coming down and taking some time to walk through what we are looking at, you know, as we head into the latter half of April.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.